The murder was carried out in Dallas by teams which consisted of the United States Navy, which was to take care of the body, make sure that the autopsy was done in a manner that would not disclose the true facts. The body was kept under surveillance and custody of the United States Navy the whole time, was taken to a naval hospital. Most of these people involved were attached to naval intelligence. It involved Division 5 of the FBI, who was training people, assassination teams, to go into Cuba and assassinate Fidel Castro. It involved the Secret Service and the CIA. When the long-range shots missed, and there were many more shots fired than anything that you've heard before, Kennedy was struck by a bullet in the back, which exited through his neck, or excuse me, was struck in the front of the neck, which exited through his back, I'm sorry. Governor Connally was struck with two separate shots. Another shot hit the windshield of the vehicle and broke it, and you can see that in the films. And we have blown these frames up many times, and we have studied it for countless hours, and we have put it together with the information that I saw in the documents, and we know exactly what happened. We know that Governor Connally was carrying a gun. And when he was hit, he started yelling, "Oh my God, they're going to kill us all." And as he turned around in the blow-ups, you can clearly see him reach into his jacket and begin to take out a pistol. And then you lose sight of what happens with that pistol. It may have been the shot from his gun that hit the window, but we don't know that for sure. We do know that the passenger, Secret Service agent by the name of Kellerman, I call him Killerman, during the motorcade, and when you blow the frames up, you can see him watching Kennedy through his rearview mirror on the right-hand outside of the car. You can see it clearly. He's sitting there, and his eyes are watching Kennedy in that rearview mirror the whole time. When Kennedy is struck in the throat, he watches for a few more seconds, then he turns around, he verifies it, he turns back to the front, he passes something to the driver, who is William Greer. They seem to converse for a second. He then goes back to his position. William Greer then glances. Then Kellerman leans over, takes the wheel. William Greer pulls, with his left hand, pulls up, and you can see it clearly. He pulls up a pistol, turns, and over his right shoulder, shoots Kennedy directly in the head. Kennedy's head then snaps backward. Jacqueline Kennedy looks at her husband. You can see her eyes go from her husband and look directly at William Greer, and then she attempts to get out of the car. She is afraid. Throughout all my combat experience, that is exactly what you do. You run away from the fire, not into it. What you see in the John Wayne movies is BS. I never saw one soldier ever run into a machine gun. You run away from the machine gun, and then you figure out how to get that machine gun next. You don't just run up there and die. That's for the Marines. If there are any ex-Marines in the crowd, I certainly do not intend to slight you. The Marines are probably one of the bravest group of men that we have in this country. However, how they ever get the courage to get out of a small boat and run up on a beach and die so that someone else can run up behind them and lay down and use that body for cover, I will never, never know. But they do it, and that's to their credit, because we wouldn't be free if they didn't. But anyway, that's what prompted that remark. I've seen this happen, and it amazes me. What happened next was that both men in the front seat hunched down. The car speeds up out of sight. During the time when William Greer is actually shooting Kennedy, the car comes to almost a complete stop, which is exactly what a driver would do if someone else is holding the wheel and he's turning around to shoot someone. You would remove your foot from the accelerator. We have tried this, and it's exactly what people do instinctively. They don't even think about it. It just happens. The film that you normally view when they show it to you on television is speeded up many times, so that everything happens real fast. You're always looking at Kennedy. You don't even detect that the car slows down, and you never look at the driver, so you wouldn't see it anyway. But just to take a precaution, they cut a few clips out there, so even if you did think to look at the driver, you still wouldn't see it. But in the film I'm going to show you tonight, we got those clips. Now, when I saw those documents, it said in the documents that the act was plainly visible in the film that was withheld from the public. Not too long ago, on the Ted Koppel late night thing, I forget what you call that. What's it called? Nightline, that's right. Ted Koppel, in answer to all the controversy, the new controversy about Kennedy's death, assassination, said, oh, but there was only one film taken in Dallas. He lied because he knew that there were three. Everyone knows that there is three. There's three in the Warren Commission report. He intentionally lied knowing that most of the American people will take his word for it without even checking, and if they thought it was three before, will think they were mistaken, not Ted Koppel. Ted Koppel is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Stop listening to the nightly news. They're lying to you. The best thing that you can ever do is turn your television off or burn it or give it to little Johnny who has a screwdriver and needs something to play with. What happened next is they took the body to Parkland Hospital in Dallas. It was illegal to remove the body. No autopsy was taken there. The doctors were ordered by the FBI and were actually interfered with. They were told not to attempt to determine the path of the projectiles through the body. They were told to get the body ready for shipment as quickly as possible when it was determined that they could not save Kennedy's life. There was no investigation done in Dallas at all. The doctors did draw sketches of what they saw, and they did make reports of what they saw immediately following and during the incident. Now, if you understand the human mind and you understand the way the legal process works, those reports are legal documents and should stand up in any court of law or any investigation, because they were done at the scene by professionals who were qualified to make those determinations. Photographs were even taken, but the photographs taken at Parkland Hospital disappeared, so that there was only the doctor's reports and the drawings left. The body left Parkland Hospital in an ornate bronze casket, was taken to Washington, D.C. Somehow, the body got out of that casket on the aircraft, and we know exactly how it was done. When Jacqueline Kennedy was taken forward to participate in the swearing-in ceremony of Lyndon Baines Johnson, the naval intelligence officers removed Kennedy's body from the bronze casket, passed it down into the baggage compartment, where it stayed like a sack of potatoes until they landed in Washington, D.C. When they landed in Washington, D.C., we have tracked down someone who was on the other side of the plane who also took a film. A film of a military helicopter, a naval helicopter to be exact, or I should say a Marine helicopter, but that's part of the Navy, landed on that side of the plane near the galley door, and something was taken out of the plane and put in that helicopter, which we now know was Kennedy's body. It was flown to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and it arrived there a full 30 minutes before the casket, which left Parkland Hospital, arrived there. President Kennedy's brain was removed and another brain that was undamaged was substituted in its place. Why? Because if they had performed an autopsy on the brain that was really actually President Kennedy's brain, they would have found that he was hit from the front, that it was an exploding pellet and not a bullet, and they would have found fragments of that pellet, and they would have found large amounts of toxic shellfish poison in the brain, which was exploded into the brain when this pellet did its thing. And it would have said, CIA, 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 because the CIA had that type of weapon at that time, and it was well known. When they finished doing that, they surgically repaired the wounds to make it look like he was hit from behind, and then they took photographs of these repairs. Then they took the body in to be autopsied as if it had come out of the Bronx casket. They also altered the throat wound. We know this. Kennedy's brain was taken out of the room where all this occurred on a gurney, covered with a cloth, and when people asked what that was being wheeled down the hall and the gurney covered with the cloth, because everybody wanted to know what the hell was going on, they were told that a woman had delivered a stillborn baby, and that was the stillborn baby. It was not. It was Kennedy's brain. Checking the records and doing thorough research, we have found out that there was no stillborn baby in Bethesda Naval Hospital on that day, or the day before, or the day after. Witnesses ask what the other casket was doing in the room. They were told that an army colonel had died and the casket was prepared for him because he had died that day and the family had requested a quick burial. Checking the records, an army colonel had not died in that hospital. In fact, no one had died in that hospital that day, and an army colonel had not died in that hospital for some time. Don't kill Mr. Greer. I want him to talk.
Okay, we're ready. Thank you.
I don't hold much hope for William Greer talking, but I want him to talk. I don't want him killed. I want that man to talk. I want him to become a man and talk. I want the rest of these so-called men and patriots in our government to become real men and real patriots and start talking. Because right now, I'm going to tell it in front of you, I'll tell it in front of the world, I'll tell it in front of the government. Our top military commanders are cowards and they are traitors. The men who represent us are cowards and traitors, and they're all afraid to talk. They're scared to death to talk. They'll let the country go down the tubes before they'll stand up and do what a man should do, and what our history demands that any man who calls himself a patriot do. Stand up and talk and tell the truth. And I'm going to continue, and I'm going to ask that you continue with some of the things that I'm going to ask you to do tonight when you leave here over the next few days and into the next year. I'm going to ask you to continue until we clean up this government, until it gets back to a government of, for, and by the people. Now I'm going to show you the Kennedy assassination tape. I want you to watch it very closely. And if you can't see it, we'll run it again. And if you still can't see it, we'll run it again. I don't care how long it takes, because you need to know this. You need to know who killed your president, and you need to know why. And you need to be incensed. You need to be outraged. You need to know that you have the power to do something about it, and then you've got to do it. You have to do it. And I'm going to give you this challenge. If you can't do it, you ought to go live in another country.
Let me see here. Thank you. years ago, the people of the United States and the world were shattered by the impact of an assassin's bullet upon the helpless, unsuspecting young president of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Watch the driver, not Kennedy!
The bullets has penetrated deeply into the body and soul of America, destroying the very lives of thousands and the heart and trust and political will of literally millions. And the years that have passed since this tragic event removed from the world stage perhaps one of the most promising human agents of peace and progressive political development, we have been fed one officially sanctioned lie after another, beginning with a blue ribbon cover-up commission to a castrated Senate Select Committee seeking to shed light upon an event deliberately enshrouded in deception, concealment, and outright falsehood. 25 years is long enough. It is time the truth was finally told, and the earnest hope that it will truly set us free of the murderers who pose as our protectors. What we're observing here is the motorcade in Dallas on November 22, 1963. As the presidential car passes behind the freeway sign, President Kennedy is struck in the throat by a bullet that was fired from the grassy knoll. As he's grasping his throat, John Connolly is turning around to his right. He, at that point, is struck. You notice the driver, or excuse me, the passenger of the car turning back to see what has happened to the president. As he turns back to the front, the driver of the car turns with his left arm over his right shoulder with a pistol and fires. You see the 45 automatic, 45 caliber, nickel-plated automatic weapon. In his left hand, he's firing over his right shoulder. You see it in relief. You see his head pointing backwards towards the president. In this enhanced close-up,
watch her eyes. She looks right at Greer.
Of the bullet upon the president, the force of the shot drives him violently backward against the back of the seat. You see Mrs. Kennedy react in horror. The ugly, gaping wound, which is evident here, according to many observers at the scene, was actually created on the print. This was not the actual nature of the wound. But you notice that Mrs. Kennedy wasted no time in trying to exit the vehicle, because she clearly was able to determine exactly where that shot had originated. And it was her personal bodyguard, Clint Hill, another Secret Service agent, who attempted to keep her in. What the air was indicating here is what appears to be the outline of a man, a hat, and his rifle. The arrow is pointing to the rifle barrel of the man in the bushes who possibly was the rifleman on the grassy knoll who fired that shot. Another view taken by another photographer. Again, you see Mrs. Kennedy trying to exit the vehicle from behind, being pushed back in by her bodyguard. A number of witnesses on the scene rushing towards the vehicle. Standing on the far right of the wall there is Abraham Zapruder, the photographer who took the original photos. The arrow here is indicating what was very likely the rifleman on the grassy knoll, the man who fired the shot which penetrated Kennedy's throat from the front, not from behind, as the Warren Commission would have you believe. Very interesting note also that the motorcycle policemen were told to remain behind the car at all times. Here you see the passenger in the front turning back, looking at the president. Instead of jumping back to assist him, he turns forward. The driver is now rotating. The weapon comes into view and he fires. You'll see this repeatedly in these sequences. Kennedy's been shot in the throat. He's leaning to his left. The driver now begins to rotate. His left arm comes over his right shoulder and he fires now. Again, you see the driver rotate. You see the weapon come into view. He's rotating again, the weapon is in view, he fires. You can clearly see his head turning and his arm and the weapon extending into view over his right shoulder. Many of the witnesses indicated that the car slowed almost to a virtual halt at about this point. And here in the normal version, you see how much more quickly to speed it up. It's much harder to determine. Many of the people who asked the question why Jackie Kennedy did not report this, it should be fairly evident that she wasted no time in getting away from the attacker.
Lights, please. Did everybody see it?
No.
Okay, those of you who did not see it, please come up to the front. And would some of you in the front here who still did not see it? Okay, good.
Yeah.